When I started in media, the most powerful storytelling platform in the world, and arguably one of the most powerful forces in the world, period, there were very few women's stories. There were no reports, news reports, about what was actually happening in women's lives. And so we knew very little about each other, keeping us in those silos where we didn't make friends, didn't make allies, didn't trust each other, didn't show up for each other, and didn't go public and break the silence on what was happening to each of us. We were all experiencing sexual harassment, every woman I know, and yet we didn't go public and we didn't trust each other enough to tell our stories. Had we done that, think of all the stories of sexual harassment and assault that we might have saved.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. In a stirring speech before the 1851 Ohio Women's Rights Convention, Sojourner Truth shared her powerful story, lamenting at the racial distinctions in women's status. "Ain't I a woman? Look at me, look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could heed me. Ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it, and bear the lash as well. Ain't I a woman? I've borne 13 children and seen most sold off into slavery. And when I cried out with my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. Ain't I a woman?" Feminism has not always been by and for all women. Critics of the feminist movement have argued that the cause, especially the second wave, has largely been limited to white, college-educated women. Historically, feminism has failed to address the concerns of women with different racial, ethnic, sexual orientation, and religious backgrounds. This is what makes storytelling so powerful. Like Sojourner Truth, when women share their different experiences, they bring to light the injustices, truths, and inequality that women like them experience every day. Stories reflect what we socially consider good, valuable, and desirable. As we encounter them from a young age, stories inevitably influence our worldviews, values, and practices by providing us with frames of reference and meaning. However, stories also have the power to produce and reproduce socially accepted values and expectations, like sexism and racism. This is why it is so important for women in positions of power and privilege to build platforms, create space, and amplify the voices of their less privileged sisters. On today's episode, we will be hearing from Pat Mitchell, editorial director of TED Woman and recent author of Becoming a Dangerous Woman. Throughout her career, Pat has focused on using media as a force for social change, with a special emphasis on the representation of women's voices and stories. Today, she will share why it is so important to live dangerously and how to embrace risk to change the world. Just by looking at Pat's CV, it's easy to see why she's a force to be reckoned with. Pat Mitchell was the first woman president and CEO of PBS. She most recently served as president and CEO of the Paisley Center for Media. Pat is also the former president of CNN Productions, where she produced hundreds of hours of documentaries and specials, which received 35 Emmy Awards and 5 Peabody Awards. She was inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame in 2008 and named one of the most powerful women in Hollywood by Hollywood Reporter. Here, Pat shares why she wanted to share her incredible career and lessons learned in her first book, Becoming a Dangerous Woman.
The book began as a memoir. After many mentees and mentors that I had worked with over the years suggested it might be a good idea to just share my story in the way I was encouraging other women to share theirs. And since I'd spent my media career focused on elevating women's stories, I felt I had to respond to the call and at least try. So I went away on a writing residency and I came back with about 300 pages of memoir material and then put it aside because I faced a couple of barriers that I think are especially felt by women. One of them was that I thought, gosh, writing about myself like this sounds like bragging. And I heard that from other women who had also set about writing books and found that they had difficulty talking about their own accomplishments as well as their own failures. So I couldn't go back to it as a straight memoir. I needed a different framework. And over the next couple of years, as I was just as engaged in my life as I had ever been, and I saw everywhere many of the same challenges that I had faced in my own work and life, then I also saw a very frightening and dangerous rollback on many of the rights that I had spent my whole life fighting for. So that gave me a different mission in writing the book. It wasn't just about sharing my story, although sharing stories is critical, in my opinion, for women to survive and thrive and move forward together. But this now had a different mission, or I should say a deeper mission, which was a call to action that we are, in fact, living in dangerous times, times when there are rollbacks on rights, when racism and sexism is on the rise everywhere, and when we are further away from full and true equality than we should be at this time, 50 years after, you know, the struggles began to move us towards equality. So that then gave the book a different intention, a different purpose. And I very quickly then began to frame my story around the stories that are continuing for women. And I also then decided to add other women's journeys and interviewed 15 additional friends of mine from different parts of the world, different kinds of backgrounds and work in the world, and asked them about their journey to becoming dangerous. Because by this time, 5 years into the process, I had determined that the book would be called Becoming a Dangerous Woman, because I felt I had finally become a dangerous woman. I had taken risks before. I had been brave and bold at various times in my life, and I had failed, and I had dealt with that. And I'd worked with women all over the world who face danger, real danger, every day. So I wanted to be very careful about choosing that word. But for me, the word had a different meaning now. And that meaning was being as brave, as bold, as risk-taking as we had to be to face the challenges of these dangerous times.
About 41% of women in media and entertainment say they've been sexually harassed by a colleague or boss at some point in their careers, according to a 2008 report. This is the highest rate among white-collar industries. The study, What #MeToo Means for Corporate America, was conducted by the Center for Talent Innovation, a New York-based think tank focused on workplace issues. The results confirm that the problem has been around a long time in news and media, the ramifications of which we're just getting a sense of with the recent sexual misconduct accusations against once high-profile types like Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, Bill O'Reilly, and Charlie Rose. Here, Pat shares the challenges she experienced with finding her voice while working in this hostile environment.
Well, certainly when I started in television, we were encouraged to play small. We were encouraged to look as much like men as possible, lower our voices, lower our necklines, follow the consultant's advice on our hair and our makeup and all the things that had nothing to do with the stories. We sort of played along to keep our jobs. But as it became so clear, that was not a winning strategy for ourselves or for women anywhere, I diverted from that path pretty quickly and began to speak up about the lack of programming, for women that actually address the issues and concerns and lives of women. And that became the sort of guiding force that gave me the courage, maybe, or might have been desperation too. But I just decided to start speaking up about that and to pursue that as a goal. And when I couldn't get that done, when I couldn't do the programming that I felt was important, and when I couldn't focus on covering going to a war zone because I knew there were stories of women there that needed to be covered, when I faced those barriers that women are facing every day of, no, you can't do that. No, a woman's never done that. No, don't be aggressive about what you want to do. Just take the assignments with gratitude. I faced all of that. But I, at some point early on, realized that was just not going to work if I really wanted to make a difference. And I did. I felt like I'd been given this huge opportunity, this media platform, this global opportunity to speak to women, to speak for women. So I began to speak up and speak out, and, you know, probably did not have the career path that others had, because if I'd kept my mouth shut and if I'd played along and taken the jobs as they came to me and the assignments, you know, I might have had a different kind of media career. But I wanted to do one that made a difference. And for me, that did require me early on to start speaking up. And since then, I've spent a lot of time encouraging other women to find their voice and their purpose and their passion as early as possible, because those are the guiding lights. Storytelling, it really is the way I think we have survived as women, and it certainly is the way in which we connect and build community. It begins with sharing our stories. And yet, when I started in media, the most powerful storytelling platform in the world, and arguably one of the most powerful forces in the world, period, there were very few women's stories. There were no reports, news reports, about what was actually happening in women's lives. And so we knew very little about each other, keeping us in those silos where we didn't make friends, didn't make allies, didn't trust each other, didn't show up for each other, and didn't go public and break the silence on what was happening to each of us. We were all experiencing sexual harassment, every woman I know, and yet we didn't go public and we didn't trust each other enough to tell our stories. Had we done that, think of all the stories of sexual harassment and assault that we might have saved. So I was complicit in that silence, as were most of the women in my generation. We feared losing our jobs, and we probably would have lost them, actually. But I wish now we had been a lot braver.
Being able to share your story is a privilege. It may not feel like one, but it is. Every day, millions of women and girls are forced to endure gender, racial, and economic inequality in silence. Silence is what keeps inequality intact, which is why it is so important to shed light on women's different experiences in the world. This is how we realize that inequality is something we all experience, just in different ways and amounts. This is what makes your fight my fight.
When I began to get a lot braver was when I went to war zones, when I went to the Middle East, I went to El Salvador, I went to Northern Ireland. But I'm not talking about the bravery of those women who were on the front lines. That's a different kind of bravery that I do not claim to have. I'm talking about the bravery of the way they shared their stories. Israeli and Arab women sitting down together and talking about what the conflict in that region had cost them in their lives, the loss of their children, their husbands, their relatives, and facing each other with that kind of sharing and then trying to find common ground for going forward. I saw that there, and in El Salvador, the women actually created the peace talks that ended that guerrilla war. So I had some early observations as a journalist as to the enormous difference. I mean, in some cases, the difference between ending violence and living with violence was because women sat down and shared their stories And in sharing their stories, they found common ground. They found common values, things that became the foundation for building peace. So I had early inspiration, which is now continued with my work with women in many of the communities in Africa, particularly the Congo, where I see such enormous resilience every day to keep going forward. And it begins often when the women sit down and start to share their stories with each other. Storytelling is so powerful, and we didn't have the kind of representation in storytelling, writ broad, storytelling on big screen, storytelling on all forms of media that gratefully we do have today, but only because, you know, we fought for it. You have to fight for it. It doesn't still just get handed to women. Women's stories are still seen as somehow less worthy, are less successful, are less broad stream, mainstream appeal. But gratefully, that's changing.
One of the most incredible research findings I've come across as part of my PhD is that simply witnessing behavior that marginalizes, discriminates, or devalues a colleague at work will have the same detrimental impact to your mental and emotional well-being as if you'd been the one to receive that negative behavior in the first place. What this finding teaches us is that men and women's silence will not protect them from the negative consequences of inequality. Speaking up, and often for one another, is the only way to bring injustice to light, and men in particular have a powerful role to play in this.
We have framed this power game as a win-lose game, and that is a loss for everyone. It's not win-lose, it's win-win. I mean, when women win, by that I mean are present, are appreciated, are integrated and an equal part of everything that's going on, the results are better. We've got every kind of data in the world, as your book clearly points out. When workplaces are more inclusive, everything is better. So we can't get to that totally representative and inclusive workplace stories. I mean, in every aspect of our lives, we have to do it together. It has to be a win-win for everyone. You know, in reading your book, I was reminded, Michelle, of how simple the fix is for corporations to become more family-friendly. And I think back on my career when we were told, don't bring pictures of your children to work. Don't ever talk about your children at work. And we hid all that. I mean, we just sat there feeling guilty about missing the soccer game because we surely weren't going to say anything about it. But when I got to NBC and there were a couple of women there who had enough power to speak up and did use their power to speak up, that's when we got the first family leave policy at NBC Network. It took people who had influence and power, and in this case, women, to come together and say, we have to change this. So it's one of my experiences has been every time the workplace got more family friendly, it did so because women came together and stood together and fought together and pushed and advocated together to get it. When I had my own company, I was told by every insurance company in the world, you cannot have on-site daycare. And I said to our financial partners, we're going to do that. I know it's more expensive. I know it's hard to find, but it's really important to the work that we're doing that mothers do not feel conflicted every minute that they're in this office. So we had on-site daycare. And now with the 3,000 or so that last time I checked, I don't know what the number is now, but the companies who have responded with looking at the realities of parenting, not just for mothers, but for fathers as well, they have better results. So the data's in, the outcomes are there. Business has a lot they can do to make it easier for women to stay on the fast track, to stay fully engaged in their careers, as well as men. And we can look around the world and see, the outcomes that have resulted.
Finally, Pat shares what it means to live dangerously.
I think the single biggest game changer that we have within our own power is to support each other, to show up for each other, to recognize that with every seat that we vacate, there's an opportunity for a woman to follow. With every room we're in, speak up for who's not in the room and try and bring them in. Advocating, mentoring, sponsoring, supporting each other is, I think, the single biggest lever for change that we have individually and collectively. And collectively, we have an enormous amount of power that we need to own and change it by the way we use it and share it.
It is such a privilege to share the career story and impact of a very dangerous and powerful woman like Pat, who is spending her privilege to ensure that all women have an opportunity to tell their story. And in doing so, she's changing the way the world sees itself. I just want to encourage all women who are listening to this episode to share their story. Whether that's an article, talk, interview, or blog, your story has the power to change the world. I really hope you all enjoyed today's episode. Before I go, I just wanted to mention that I'm sharing my story in my new book, The Fix, Overcome the Invisible Barriers That Hold Women Back at Work, which is out March 3rd. I'm also speaking at many events in London, New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Boston. And I'd love to see you at all these events. You can find out more at michellepeking.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you all again next week.